The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. How's it going, Lance?
It's going pretty well. How are you today?
I am doing great, and I want to introduce Jennifer Amell, who is here with us as well. What's up, Jen?
Hello, everybody. How are you guys?
Doing okay. I mean, it's a heavy episode. I'm going to say it's a heavy episode. It's almost hard to talk about, and we'll get into this a little bit more. Great work putting all this together, Jen. Can you talk a little bit about how it all, even came to be?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this episode is a bit of a long road for us. I think earlier this year, we were introduced to Natalie Qualm. She's a federal law attorney with the Whistleblower Law Firm out of Florida. And Natalie practices federal law, and she takes cases that have the potential to change laws, specifically within the government sector. So this case became super high profile and is used as kind of precedent to change law federally. So it's interesting in that respect, and then very tragic personally.
Yeah, and we'll get into the I Am Vanessa Guillen bill a little bit later in the episode. Vanessa was murdered on April 22nd, 2020 at Fort Hood in Texas. Her case immediately became high profile, garnering a lot of media attention and public support for systemic change in how the military addressed reports of sexual assault and harassment. And there's also a GoFundMe that Myra Guillen has organized. You can search Soldier Vanessa Guillen Missing, and they are still accepting donations.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of confusion with the campaigns that are out there currently. There's a couple of them that are that have different names attached to the campaigns, and you want to look for the one that's under the name Myra Guillen. That's the correct one to donate to.
And that's Myra, M-A-Y-R-A, and the correct one to donate to is that one, like you said, and it's raised over $360,000. So big thank you to the over 11,000 donors who contributed to this cause. This goes towards what you were saying, Jen, about it being a very high-profile case. What is it about this that thrust it into the spotlight so strongly?
I think it was due in part to the brutal nature in which Vanessa Guillen was murdered, and she was an enlisted soldier. She was with the U.S. Army in the Regimental Engineer Squadron of the 3rd Cavalry Regiment. She was brutally attacked by a fellow enlisted soldier, and it was due in part to some sexual harassment that she had faced while in the military. And it kind of raised the question of where do soldiers go if they are subject to harassment? Where do they go to report this type of thing, if a colleague that outranks them, if there's people in power that are supposed to, like, you know, uphold the law and, you know, restore honor to the military, if those people are perpetrating these crimes, like, who is keeping these people in check? And I think that's the central question at the heart of this case, and what kind of captured the hearts of the nation.
Absolutely. I think Vanessa felt trapped in some way, and Fort Hood has a dark history, and really, we've been living through it. It's still ongoing, and that's a problem, and I think Vanessa's was the most high-profile of the disappearances or murders out of Fort Hood.
Yeah, and it kind of came with a good kind of tailwind of the Me Too movement as well. So I think that's kind of what brought it to the attention of people with power in the government and different political figures too. This is a problem that needs to be rectified.
Okay, so big shout out to Natalie Kwam and the Whistleblower Law Firm. She's doing great work with the Guillen family and other families.
Yeah, and it was through Natalie that we met Vanessa's sister, Myra.
And you were able to speak with Myra on the phone and have a, I don't know, significant conversation with her.
Yeah, she's a super strong advocate for her sister. She's kind of been the face of this I Am Vanessa Guillen bill, and she's done a lot of public appearances too, and she just wants justice for her sister and some, like, actionable change within the military structure, which I'm sure we'll get into.
And I gotta say, well done carrying on that conversation with Myra, because it was emotional and there was a lot of anger that you could hear in her voice, and the details were almost too hard to listen to, but you have to hear it. You have to hear what was done to her sister and what was done to cover it up, not only like in the immediate aftermath of the murder, trying to dismember and dispose of the body, but what happened just within the structure of the military and what happened within the structure of law enforcement. It's really tough to listen to, but I don't think that you can get the importance of this story unless you feel that, unless you feel like, I can barely listen to this, because it should not be a comfortable thing to hear.
Exactly. It's often strong emotion, strong empathy that moves people to make change.
Hi, my name is Myra Guillen, and I'm Vanessa's older sister. As a kid, she was always a very active person. She would never just sit in one place and stay still. We were really into sports. Most of her time, we would spend it playing outside, whether it was soccer, playing tag, and then our main thing was jumping rope. That was something that we loved doing, and she was just a very active, outgoing person. We grew up here in the southeast area of Houston, Texas. She was, you could say, goofy. She would always laugh even at the most serious moments, and it was contagious. That was just her. She found a joy in everything.
And what made Vanessa want to join the military?
Ever since, as far as I can remember, she's always been this active person. She never thought that she suited a job like office-wise. She wanted more than that. She wanted something where she could daily be active and engaged. As far as I can remember, even if we would watch action movies, she would always tell me, I want to be like that. And it would, most of the time it would be soldiers or action movies in general that she would see herself in. And eventually she did pursue joining the military as soon as she could. And she even preferred that over something that she did love the most, which was playing soccer. So she had both routes, either the military or pursuing a scholarship, being an actual professional soccer player. Yet she chose to go to the military.
Was she going to go to college to play soccer?
Yeah, she was in between both decisions. So it was to pursue college and keep playing soccer and eventually become a professional, because there wasn't a day she wouldn't play soccer. Or, you know, also wanting the honor and the respect of being a soldier.
Yeah, absolutely. And what branch of the military did she join?
The Army.
to join the army. And did she want to do a particular job in the army?
From what her task, whatever task she showed, she chose, it was the arms repair. So her main interest at that point was, I guess, anything that had to do with arms.
And that's like guns and stuff, right?
Yes.
So she knew her way around all the weapons that soldiers yes. would carry.
Well, she would maintain up to date. She would clean. She would disassemble and arm back the small arms. She wasn't that into the bigger arms yet. But she would just keep them up to date, clean them, fix them if necessary, stuff like that.
How did she get stationed at Fort Hood? Was that right out of boot camp or did she go through multiple transfers?
Well, she did start her boot camp in South Carolina. Then she went to Virginia for her actual training in the arms repair. And then from there, she was stationed at Fort Hood. And, you know, they don't get to pick where to go. It's more that they sent you there and that's where you have to be stationed.
Myra said that it was sometimes hard to keep in close contact with her sister as she was going through boot camp. They had always been close, but it was a bit more difficult for Vanessa to keep her family updated on everything that was happening in her life because of the demands of Army life.
At the very beginning, it was just letters, which I still have them up to date. And once in a while, she would escape and try to hide and call, and it was like a 1-minute call, and of course, it was a very emotional call, but we did try to keep in touch as much as we could. Even if she got in trouble, she just wanted to, you know, quickly tell us like, hey, I miss you guys and I hope to see you soon. You know, it was nothing but tears. But at the same time, I was really happy for her because she was pursuing what she wanted to do.
Yeah, it seemed like she was really living her dream. So how long was she stationed at Fort Hood?
So about a year and 4 months, a year and 4 months.
Did she make good friends?
She was always a very solitary person. If it wasn't us as her sisters, she did have a couple friends. But I know in the base, she would tell me that everybody would sort of just concentrate on their own thing. But eventually she did tell me that she had like 3 or 4 friends in the base that she wanted me to meet at some point, but I was too busy that I couldn't join her, but she did have like 3 or 4.
We asked Myra if Vanessa was the type of person who would confide in her family if she was in trouble or needed advice on a particular situation.
She most of the time would keep it to herself, but if she did have questions, like advice for her future, she would ask me, but more on her personal stuff. She wouldn't really, like, her leaving to the army did separate us a bit because I was too busy at work and she was too busy at work. We weren't as close as before.
So during the year and about 3 months that Vanessa was stationed at Fort Hood, she didn't really tell her sister Myra that she was experiencing some kind of harassment from her fellow male soldiers.
She never told me directly. She would kind of tell me, though, that she didn't feel comfortable at that base. She would tell me, hopefully one day I can open up and tell you what's going on. But I didn't want to pressure her. And then most of the time I thought that it was work related. So I was like, you know, maybe she's stressing because there's so much work she has to do. But, you know, I have so much work to do. And I was like, well, eventually she'll tell me, you know, what's going on. But I really do wish that I would have pushed her to open up to me. She did speak to my mom about it back around February, I believe, and she did open up to us once, you know, the disappearance happened because she thought it was something important and that it probably had to do with my sister disappearing. She did state that there was a higher up. She did use the term sergeant, but with these military terms, you know, a lot of people can't relate because all of them are similar, NCO, sergeant, first class, or all these terms that she just used the word sergeant. And she did tell my mom that there was a higher up that would bother her, that would sexually harass her, that would follow her, etc. And that's when my mom told her, well, you need to do something. And, you know, she had nowhere to go. They There was an emotional talk that they had, and she said she would fix it on her own.
So she did she try to like report it to the person who would be above that sergeant?
You know, I wouldn't be sure. I don't know how high that higher up or that individual would be. That it's how I've stated before. If the person that you're supposed to run to for help is the one creating the problem, then what is there left for you to do?
Do you think she was scared or frustrated?
I believe so, because she did tell my mom she didn't want to put her in danger. She already knows how we were. We would have instantly tried to do something about it. So it's hard to even think about the fear that she felt.
There was one colleague who worked with Vanessa in the armory. His name was Specialist Aaron David Robinson. He was a 20-year-old from Illinois, and it seemed like Vanessa alluded to harassment not from Robinson, but from at least two other soldiers who also outranked Vanessa.
Yeah, so she didn't name Robinson specifically, so we don't know if Robinson actually, you know, sexually assaulted or harassed her before this, but she had mentioned two other people. I think Myra had mentioned potentially a sergeant, first class. We don't have names of anybody, but I think this has been addressed internally. But what you got to understand is that there's like a pretty firmly entrenched hierarchy in the military that is like by nature meant to allocate power along a ranking system. We all know this. I mean, we have paramilitary organizations like, you know, law enforcement and stuff that have like, you're imbued with certain amount of responsibilities and powers, like the higher rank you are. Vanessa, at the time before she disappeared, was only an enlisted soldier. So she only received her rank of specialist posthumously. In other words, she was the lowest soldier on the totem pole in terms of like the military hierarchy. Specialist Robinson outranked her at the time. So by this hierarchy structure, he held more power than her. And Myra additionally said that Vanessa may have been harassed by those other non-commissioned or commissioned officers, and they were of an even higher rank. So if those with power are the ones perpetrating the harassment, who could Vanessa have reported this to without fearing retaliation from, you know, her fellow enlisted soldiers or those indeed who had higher ranks?
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch Unsolved Mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, but wait, there's more to the story. And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hares from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are.
And a thank you to our sponsors. Back to the program.
On April 22nd, 2020, Vanessa brought some arms to the armory in order to cross-reference serial numbers with Aaron Robinson. They were alone in the armory. Nobody knows what transpired between Vanessa and Robinson, but it led to a violent altercation.
Well, apparently from what's stated, and it's even harder because, you know, at this point, I did receive the autopsy paperwork where it confirms that it was mainly her cranial area. Apparently, Robinson did bludgeon her with a hammer, and she did pass. And even after that, he still had the nerve to go pick up his, how can I call her? Apparently his girlfriend, and still go and cause more damage and try to get rid of her by burning her and trying to just disappear her like nothing.
And Jen, this was clearly difficult for Myra to describe. And being that this was the first time you interviewed her, as you're hearing her say this, what was going through your head? How were you planning on following up her account?
Yeah, I mean, I was even hesitant to ask her to tell us the facts of Vanessa's murder because it is so brutal. I didn't really want to make her say it, but, you know, I kind of asked her if she was comfortable with it, like, to please tell us what happened. And I was struck by the way she delivered the information. It was less from an emotional standpoint and more like, here are the facts. Like, here's, she said, like, judging from the things we read, like, in the autopsy report, which is kind of very clinical language to talk about something like this. And I think that's because she had to, in some way, emotionally separate herself from these brutal events.
And according to statements from Robinson, after he killed Vanessa, he went to the gas station where his girlfriend, Cicely Aguilar, was working and asked her to help him get rid of Vanessa's remains.
So he leaves the body in the armory, and she was left in a large case, and then took her to another location where they planned to dismember the body, and then they dumped her body near the Leon River and tried to set her remains on fire. They tried to, like, wipe her out of existence.
They really did. I think Myra said something to the effect they, like, tried to disappear her like she was nothing. I think that's a direct quote.
Yeah,
I'm just struck again by the brutality and the violence of this act. I mean, not only in the murder itself, but what they did to Vanessa's remains after the fact. It wasn't just dismembering the body. It was also setting it on fire. Like, that's crazy.
And was this his girlfriend or ex-wife? Or were they currently in a relationship?
I think they were loosely dating.
Loosely dating. Loosely dating. Like, I've loosely dated people. That is a tall order. How does somebody agree to that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure why Robinson didn't approach like a fellow soldier to help him with this task. I imagine he was far from home as he was stationed at Fort Hood. So maybe that was really the only person that he had established a relationship with and knew he could trust in some way. I don't know. It's weird to put it like that. But if I'm placing myself in his shoes and he needs help, like, he would have to be thinking about like not wanting to incriminate other soldiers at Fort Hood. And maybe judging from his actions and how he disposed of Vanessa, it seems like he didn't hold women in high regard. So maybe didn't even think twice about involving this other woman in his plans.
Vanessa was reported missing soon after her disappearance, and Robinson was swiftly suspected and taken into what can only be described as loose custody.
Custody, I don't even know if that's the correct term, to be honest with you. They had him under watch for a while, and it was an unarmed soldier. And apparently he found a way to flee, and I don't understand how the soldier still running after him couldn't advise somebody else to follow him once he got in the vehicle. You know, it doesn't make sense to me how these things, how they play, how they say they play along when it all could have been prevented. I kind of feel like they even wanted to let him go.
Why do you say that?
You know, if you have someone under watch, you're going to try your best to not let them get out. You know, at this point, why did he still have his phone on him? It's like so many questions that mm-hmm. are unanswered. It's like you're giving him the possibility to escape.
So they didn't take anything away from him. Did they take his service weapon away?
I believe so. From what I know, he only had his phone on him. Even then, you know, our phones can either save our lives or you can make one call and stuff like that.
Robinson managed to flee his guard, get into a vehicle, and gain access to a firearm. Before he could be apprehended, Robinson shot and killed himself.
You know, at that point, I thought it was just like I was living in an actual movie. I didn't know how to react to that. I was blank for a second. And, you know, I was like, he took the truth with him. How are we supposed to find out why, who, when, if it was just him or were other people involved? It was like a dead end for me.
I cannot believe this happened. This is insane to me that he was put under like an unarmed guard to make sure he just like didn't wander off. Like, that it's the friggin' honor system here. This guy is a murderer, and he took the first chance he could possibly think of to like get out of there. I don't know what was going through his mind. It seemed like he obviously didn't want to go through a trial or, you know, anything like that. So I mean, he did make the decision to kill himself rather than get captured by law enforcement or the military police. I tend to think of this as like the easy way out, that he didn't have to face Vanessa's family. He didn't have to answer to any of these crimes. He just like got to leave without giving any answers as to why he did this. It's infuriating.
It is infuriating. I'm impressed with the rapidness in which they captured him, which I believe was done through a lot of cell phone data between himself and Vanessa and Aguilar, I believe. But he shot himself how many months later? A couple of months later, right? It was like the beginning of July?
I believe so, yeah.
So I don't know how fast like law enforcement typically moves in this situation, but that seems like a very fast process. It feels like to me they identified who it was pretty quickly and had some pretty definitive witness accounts, statements, and evidence that was impossible for him and for Aguilar to get out of.
Yeah, it for sure seemed like a slam dunk case. And Vanessa was seen going into the armory, and like they knew that she was there alone with Robinson, so it was like pretty easy to connect the two of them before her, or at the time of her disappearance. So yeah, I think they solved it super quickly, but like it doesn't matter because they let him get away.
Well, at least Vanessa's name is remembered so well by at least this community. You know, Robinson is not a remembered name, maybe because of his suicide and there was no trial. But sometimes killers sort of become more popular than their victims, and that's disgusting too. So I'm not really sure whether to be happy or not about this guy not being remembered. I don't know if that was what he wanted or what. Obviously, we don't want to give him what he wanted.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his designs were for this, but I think it's like due to the hard work and the kind of PR efforts on behalf of Natalie Qualm and the Guillen family, because they worked so hard to keep this story in front of the media and to keep it focused on Vanessa and not exactly what happened or why she died, you know. But like, it's also a hopeful message too. They're like, yeah, it's horrible that we're missing our sister, our daughter, but we're going to use this to make lasting change in her honor.
Do you think he escaped justice by taking his own life?
Well, just as here on Earth, he did escape the punishment that was coming. But justice with God, I hardly doubt it.
Yeah, do you think he's being judged in the afterlife?
Yes.
So pretty much in the immediate aftermath of this tragedy, the media swarmed on Myra and her family, and Myra said that it was both a good and a bad thing. While that kind of publicity is sometimes hard to manage, they wanted Vanessa's stories told and they wanted justice. So in a sense, everything came together in order to get this the most publicity and the brightest spotlight.
We tried our best to keep it up and going and, you know, for people to pay attention that it wasn't just another civilian. It was an American soldier that signed her life away. And she wasn't protected. She wasn't respected. She wasn't, you know, she just wasn't honored the way that she should have been.
Suffice it to say, Myra and her family wanted answers, but they couldn't just walk into Fort Hood and start questioning the military brass. That's when the Guillen family met Natalie Qualm, the federal law attorney.
I needed help. I was looking for someone to help us, and I was about to go and pay this one lawyer that was ready to help us. And for some reason, I just didn't feel good about him. And that same day, I get in contact with Natalie. And as soon as I speak with her, it's like she completely understands where I'm coming from. And we just, you know, we click. And I felt that I could confide in her. And she told me that she wouldn't charge me anything. So that's how I knew that she was passionate about actually helping us. And she wasn't just in it for it being her job and making profit like the other person was. Well, first, she did accompany us into the base, trying to talk to those leadership that think that they can intimidate you just because you're a 22-year-old. I'm not 22. I was 21 at the time. And, you know, they feel that since I don't have that much experience in life, or since, you know, I just don't have experience with any of what happened, that they could just play me dumb. And with Natalie on my side, you know, she knows what I'm able to retrieve, what documents, what not, what questions I can ask, what I can't ask. And it was also helpful because now they were the ones being intimidated, not me. And they knew that they had to give me answers as soon as possible.
Did that feel empowering?
Yes. You know, when I would first go to the meetings by myself, I was usually very quiet and I would just take whatever they gave me. But as soon as I started joining in with Natalie, it was like never-ending questions, and they were the ones that weren't able to answer.
What struck Natalie Qualm about Vanessa's case is that it seemed like her death seemed linked to the sexual harassment and assault that she experienced in the Army. whether her murder was due to the fact that she refused Robinson's sexual advances or if he was punishing Vanessa for potentially telling someone that he and others were abusing her, one thing remains evident. Vanessa should have had recourse to report this harassment without fear of retaliation. That's where Natalie sought to change the law. And to do that, she needed to make Vanessa Guillen a household name. And here is Natalie Kawam.
Well, they have no legal recourse. So if they get sexually harassed or sexually assaulted, they cannot file any lawsuits. They can't be made whole. They can request for a SHARP, which is a person in their unit, to investigate the matter. If they find that there is sexual assault or some kind of crime but punishment, they are able to go to military court and have a military trial, which is under their guidelines, the way that they handle those matters, very different than civilian and federal court. You know, so they have their own rules, their own laws, their own military judge, their own military prosecutors and such, which are JAGs. And so, unfortunately, you're stuck in this world of things done their way. And, you know, obviously, you're stuck in the military for however long your contract is, which does not provide much relief to anyone that feels like they'll just quit or they'll just leave. They can't do that. So they have to go through the system. They have to play by the system. They have to comply with the system. And the system, as we all know, is broken. So my goal to make sure that our military do have a fair shake, at least, when they report something and they're not stuck with a bias institute that they are now, presently as we speak, stuck with or have to deal with.
You know, it's sad how I didn't know that the military had such a dark background. I completely, you know, I was shocked. I was surprised when all of this happened and I started researching and seeing how it's so bad. It's a huge problem.
And this is when Natalie decided to draw up the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act of 2020.
The bill would help set up a third party that would be completely out of the chain of command, out of the army, and completely private. It would help get all the military members that need assistance, both men and women, with any type of sexual harassment, sexual assault. They would be able to come to this third party and express themselves freely and without fear. And, you know, hopefully at this point, it would be saving their own lives.
I asked Myra what justice looks like for Vanessa and her family at this point.
You know, at this point, I just wish to find out the truth with the congressional investigation, because I do feel that there's more people involved to this. It wasn't just Robinson. And I hope to find out the truth and the motive why he did what he did. Or why they did what they did with my sister, and hopefully passing the bill and being able to give the help that my sister would have needed at some point.
As of this recording, the I Am Vanessa Guillen bill was introduced into the House of Representatives on September 9th, 2020, and has been referred to the House Committee on Armed Service.
Yeah, so it hasn't passed yet. It's in review right now. I know Natalie said that a lot of decision-making and discussion has been held up by the coronavirus. So it could be quite some time before this bill is like actually passed or, you know, shot down. Hopefully it's not, though.
And Cecily Aguilar, Robinson's girlfriend who allegedly helped him get rid of Vanessa's body, was indicted on 11 different counts, has pleaded not guilty to all 11 counts, and is currently awaiting trial.
To help the Guillen family, you can go to Myra Guillen's GoFundMe page. And there's a link in the show notes.
Yeah, and again, make sure you are going to the correct campaign. That's under Myra, M-A-Y-R-A, Guillen, G-U-I-L-L-E-N. Make sure you're going to that campaign under her name, because there are several other illegitimate ones that are floating out there.
And please keep talking about Vanessa Guillen and use the I Am Vanessa Guillen hashtag.